Thanks, guys. Tim, alcoholic. Okay, so here we are. We are in step 12, chapter 7, working with others. To me, that this is the this is where the rubber meets the road, and I think it's going to speak for itself. I won't need to give too much interpretation here. All right, page 89. We are reading 89 to 103. And we're going to not do any of the 12 and 12, only because of the volume of the reading. But I think there is much fodder in the 12 and 12 that supports this. But after reading it, I don't think much is needed beyond this. And you judge for yourself. Here we go. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. To me, I interpret that as nothing, with the exception of one, says step one, nothing is going to trump this. They're all supportive of. It's clearing away the baggage. It's getting a conscious contact with your higher power. It's being honest. But a lot of those things, again, with the exception of step one, have a lot of gray area in it. If we're struggling, I don't know if the answer is prior to 12. It may be, but I don't know if it is. And particularly when it tells me nothing will protect me more than working with another alcoholic. I think it's the purpose of all the work that we've done up to this point. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carrying this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. Perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals, or go to a meeting. Right? You go to a beginner's meeting to find a new sponsee. Seems like it makes sense to me. They will be only too glad to assist you. Don't start out as an evangelist or reformer. So this is also comes from the suggestion of Dr. Silkworth. Don't lead with the white light experience. Don't lead necessarily. You could. You know, it is sort of a judgment call. But there's a cautionary tone here. Be careful because that will turn off some people. The idea that Silkworth gave is to start out with the medical diagnosis of it's a mental physical disease. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You will be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So we have a tendency to have the potential of being more successful than doctors, ministers, spouses, employers. We have the potential because we are the same. We don't talk about it from, gee, I read yesterday. That happened to me. I can identify with that. That starts the process. That cracks through the armor typically better. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. What's our only aim? To be helpful. When you discover a prospect that could be, we could use the word sponsee in more modern terms, right? When you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. This advice is given for his family also. They should be patient, realizing they are dealing with a sick person. If there is any indication that he wants to stop, have a good talk with the person most interested in him, usually his wife. get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, and his religious leanings. You need this information to put yourself in his place, to see how you would like him, how you would like him to approach you if the tables were turned. Sometimes it is wise to wait till he goes out on a binge. The family may object to this, but unless he is in a dangerous physical condition, it is better to risk it. Don't deal with him when he is very drunk, unless he is ugly and the family needs your help. Wait for the end of the spree, or at least for a lucid interval. Then let his family or a friend ask him if he wants to quit for good, and if he would go to any extreme to do so. If he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. You should be described to him as one of a fellowship who, as part of their own recovery. So you're actually telling the prospect, hey, part of my recovery is for me to come and talk to you. So him as one of a fellowship who, as part of their own recovery, try to help others who will be glad to talk to him if he cares to see you. If he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. Neither should the family hysterically plead with him to do anything, nor should they tell him much about you. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. You might place this book where he can see it in the interval. Here, no specific rule can be given. The family must decide these things, but urge them not to be over-anxious, for that might spoil matters. Usually, the family should not try to tell your story. When possible, avoid meeting a man through his family. Approach through a doctor or an institution is a better bet. If your man needs hospitalization, he should have it, but not forcibly unless he is violent. Let the doctor, if he will, tell him he has something in the way of a solution. When your man is better, the doctor might suggest a visit from you. Though you have talked with the family, leave them out of the first discussion. Under these conditions, your prospect will see he is under no pressure. He will feel he can deal with you without being nagged by his family. Call on him while he is still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. So if we're in a bottom or one of our bottoms or a near bottom, we are potentially more receptive. The channel is more likely to be open. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit. In other words, not the solution. You don't go there yet. It's premature. But say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. So to me, what that's saying is we adapt ourselves to meet the other person. We don't force the person to do it our personality. We adapt our approach to meet the person. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. We suggest that you do this as we have done in the chapter on alcoholism. What's in the chapter on alcoholism? It's page 30. It's step one. Right? This is where we're going to start him. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. In other words, this kind of gets him talking now. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, and we can define a real alcoholic on page 44, first paragraph, there's the definition right there. Begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. In other words, if you're a real alcoholic, jails, institution, and death are your only choices. There's A, B, and C, only choices, no D. Show him from your own experience, you're telling only about yourself, not what he should do, from your own experience, how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. So in other words, we're convincing him, which we see in step one, it's powerlessness, and self-will will not beat it, because as a real alcoholic, we're beyond human aid. We have no choice because we have no power. So the idea is that we surrender to that idea and then go about finding the power, capital P. Don't at this stage refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that he possibly can if he is not too alcoholic. So if he still has the idea that he can control his drinking, he hasn't been sold on step one. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Fatal meaning you're going to die from it, or you're going to get locked up and not be able to drink. And you know, talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. So doctors are rightly loath, reluctant. Loath means reluctant. But you may talk to them about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. So doctors are reluctant to talk about the hopelessness of alcoholism because they typically wouldn't know the solution. We know the solution, and the solution is finding the power and then going out and serving others. Finding the power, clearing away the wreckage of the past, and then go to work. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have an entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. So up to this point, we haven't told him what the solution is. All this chit-chat, we haven't told him the answer yet. Now, in italics, it says, let him ask you that question if he will. Now, in italics, tell him exactly what happened to you. So experience, strength, and hope. You give him the full boat now. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power, capital P, greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. So that italicized sentence there is basically steps 2 and 3. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. Your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. His religious education and training may be far superior to yours. In that case, he is going to wonder how you can add anything to what he already knows. But he will be curious to learn why his own convictions have not worked and why yours seem to work so well. He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. So you can tell me all day long all the different religious routines you go through, procedures you go through on a daily basis, but it will probably, if not coupled with the rest of the solution, it will probably not fight your alcoholism. It will not be the power with a capital P. Because that is merely faith. We are not talking about faith in a power greater than ourselves. We are talking about trust in a power greater than ourselves. And that's a verb. That's action. That's a lot of work. You need to be perspiring a little, right? He may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. I didn't even know that sentence was coming. Let him see that you are not there to instruct him in religion. Admit that he probably knows more about it than you do. But call to his attention the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it or he would not drink. So his faith couldn't do it, but because he could not have applied it, that would have been the trust. So that would have been getting selfish, self-centered out of the way to then be of service to humankind. And specifically, under our game, to another alcoholic. Perhaps your story will help him see where he has failed to practice the very precepts he knows so well. So here it's saying, fail to practice. That's a verb. That's action. He's telling you all the things he believes, but he hasn't done them. He hasn't done stuff. We represent no particular faith or denomination. We are dealing only with general principles common to most denominations. Outline the program of action. What's the program of action? Well, basically, it's all the steps. You could look at it as from 4 to 9, because 1, 2, and 3 is sort of decision-making. 4 through 9 is definitely work. So that could be the program of action. Or you could look at it as all the steps or the program of action. I'd be okay with that because there's action in 10, 11, and 12. Yeah, it's repeating all of the above. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal. Step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Maybe you could look at it like that. How you straightened out your past. That'd be more typical of 8 and 9. And why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him, which would be 12. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital role in your own recovery. Second time they said it in this chapter. So how many times, I think it says someplace else in here, but how many times is Bill unsuccessful before Dr. Bob? He had all the same information. What did he do different? He got to the point where he was desperate, where he felt as though it was important to reach out to another alcoholic to save his own ass. All those other times when he went into the bar and grabbed the guy off the bar stool, it was to save him. Wrong perspective. Wrong perspective. We go to the person to save ourselves. It's a paradox. It's almost a contradiction. Mm-hmm. We go to help the other person to help ourselves. And in helping them, potentially they are helped, but is actually irrelevant of whether they're helped or not. We stay sober so that God may have put that person who we're unsuccessful with in our path to be ready for this next one. So we're not in the results game. We're in the effort game. It says to try to carry this message. It doesn't say you will carry this message. You will put the effort in, but the message may not have gotten through. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. That's the smashing of ego. That is the, I am now God-centered, not self-centered. The world doesn't revolve around me. Every gift I am given, it is a blessing for me to give to someone else, to help someone else. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. The seed has been planted, right? This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. Again, it's almost counterintuitive, right? You think, you know, the more hopeless they are, okay, the success chances go down. No, they go up. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. Coming in here, skipping, and, you know, the DWI was pleaded down to driving while, you know, and whatever's under DWI, I don't even know.
But
what is it?
DUI?
I don't know. So they change this crap all the time. Now, and I have a few of them myself. You think I know this, right? Long time ago. So the point is that the more screwed up your life is and the more you feel as though it's hopeless. And again, maybe even saying very screwed up is wrong, because there are high bottom people where they've lost almost nothing, but they feel as though they've lost control, and that causes hopelessness. I mean, I can't control this thing, but they've lost nothing. The job doesn't know, spouse isn't all over them. They walk into a meeting, but they feel hopeless because they just feel as though they can't stop. Well, that's the key ingredient. So the more hopeless, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. Your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all the program. Like, I'm just going to do 1, 2, and 3. Who wants to do 4? And let's just skip on down to 12. Your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. So that's 4, 5, 6, 7, right? Do not contradict his view, such views. Do not. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken action. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, lend him your copy of this book. Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. If you do stay, let him steer the conversation in any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake, not always, sometimes. If he has trouble later, he is likely to say you rushed him. You will be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection. And the kit of spiritual tools is the 12 steps. We don't really have anything else. Show him how they worked with you. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. If he is not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act only as a banker for his financial difficulties, or nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. This he may do after he gets hurt some more, which means another bottom, or a more serious bottom. If he is sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach. So in other words, watch what he just did right there. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way, meaning non-spiritual, or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that worked with us. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common and that we would like, in any case, to be friendly. Let it go with that. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough, that's hopeless, desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it is a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, so here's a great tip. This is sponsor stuff, right? If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced he cannot recover by himself. So you do him a disservice by not leaving him alone. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. So I also use this as this paragraph as the example of, once I'm taking somebody through the steps, I take another sponsee. So, you know, somebody says, yeah, I've had a sponsee. I've had him for, you know, 13 years. How many do you have? Well, no, I just have that one. I think we missed the point. We're supposed to take people through the steps. And once we're through the steps, you take another one, you know, and then like I sort of like then encourage them to take somebody to sort of like send the tentacles out rather than sort of caught down in the minutiae of one person's, you know, my expectation is somebody that comes back to me to talk about things about AA. You know, should I take that literature commitment? That's a great thing to talk about, you know, or we become very friendly and we talk about spouses and what, that's great. But like, yeah, I got to call my sponsor and unload for half an hour. I don't think that that's really our gig. I really don't. Too much. You know, first 90 days, six months, yeah. But 7 years later, no. They should have six sponsees on their own. Which I think would also help them to answer their own thing that they call me for the question. Because they're giving that, you know, advice to somebody else, to a new guy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. Lori? Yeah. Bill Wilson, absolutely. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had a spiritual experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision. Now, I've always said that that is step three, to make a decision. I've come to feel as though now that's one, two, and three. We make a decision that we're powerless. We make a decision that our life is unmanageable. We make a decision that we're going to pursue a spiritual theme, that we're going to accept the precepts or are willing to accept the precepts of step two. And we make the decision in step three of turning our life and will over to the care of God. And we prove that by saying the third step prayer. So I'd say steps one, two, and three is the decision that they're talking about here. And tell his story. 4, 5, 6, 7 probably. But do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. He may be broke and homeless. If he is, you might try to help him get a job or give him a little financial assistance. But you should not deprive your family or creditors of money they should have. Perhaps you will want to take the man into your home for a few days. But be sure you use discretion. Be certain he will be welcomed by your family and that he is not trying to impose upon you for money, connections, or shelter. Permit that and you only harm him, you will be making it possible for him to be insincere. You may be aiding in his destruction rather than his recovery. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery, not theirs. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day, if need be. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time, you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Occasionally, you will have to meet such conditions. We seldom allow an alcoholic to live in our homes for long at a time. It is not good for him, and it sometimes creates serious complications in a family. Though an alcoholic does not respond, there is no reason why you should neglect his family. You should continue to be friendly to them. The family should be offered your way of life, which is what? The 12 steps. Should they accept and practice spiritual principles, there is a much better chance that the head of the family will recover. And even though he continues to drink, the family will find life more bearable. So that's basically what they say at Al-Anon. They show up, the spouse shows up in Al-Anon, they says, I got to tell you the story about my wife, you know? And they say, okay, that's terrific. Now you got to get busy and do the 12 steps. Right? Like, okay, time out. Now you got to... For the type of alcoholic who is able and willing to get well, little charity in the ordinary sense of the word is needed or wanted. The men who cry for money and shelter before conquering alcohol are on the wrong track. Yet, we do go to great extremes to provide each other with these very things when such action is warranted. This may seem inconsistent, but we think it is not. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Note, it didn't say have faith in God. Trust, verb, do. Now, the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family, amend. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family, and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. Kind of the second part of the step, no? And to practice these principles in all our affairs. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home, though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Demonstration's a verb. His own spiritual action. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover that they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. After they have seen tangible results, the family will perhaps want to go along. These things will come to pass naturally and in good time provided. However, the alcoholic continues to demonstrate that he can be sober, considerate, and helpful, regardless of what anyone says or does. Of course, we all fall much below this standard many times, but we must try to repair the damage immediately, lest we pay the penalty by esprit. That's step 10. But we must try to repair the damage immediately. Step 10. If there be divorce or separation, there should be no undue haste for the couple to get together. The man should be sure of his recovery. The wife should fully understand his new way of life. If their old relationship is to be resumed, it must be on a better basis, since the former did not work. This means a new attitude and spirit all around. That's a psychic change, if you ask me. Sometimes it is to the best interests of all concerned that a couple remain apart. Obviously, no rule can be laid down. Let the alcoholic continue his program day by day. When the time for living together has come, it will be apparent to both parties. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. We have seen men get well whose family have not returned at all. We have seen others slip when the family came back too soon. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. Here are the 12-step promises. Ready? If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When you look back, you will realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances! Exclamation point. When working with a man and his family, you should take care not to participate in their quarrels. You may spoil your chance of being helpful if you do. But urge upon a man's family that he has been a very sick person and should be treated accordingly. You should warn against arousing resentment or jealousy. You should point out that his defects of character are not going to disappear overnight. Show them that he has entered upon a period of growth. Ask them to remember when they are impatient, the blessed fact of his sobriety. If you have been successful in solving your own domestic problems, tell the newcomer's family how that was accomplished. In this way, you can set them on the right track without becoming critical of them. The story of how you and your wife settled your difficulties is worth any amount of criticism. And they're using word criticism to mean advice. It's worth any amount of advice. So the truthful examples that you use to solve your problem is worth anything, is worth a lot more than strictly advice. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed, 100%. So our rule is not to avoid a place where there is drinking. Here's the qualification to that, italicized. If we have a legitimate reason for being there. That includes bars, nightclubs, dances, receptions, weddings, even plain ordinary whoopee parties. To a person who has had experience with an alcoholic, this may seem like tempting providence, but it isn't. You will note that we made an important qualification. Therefore, ask yourself on each occasion. So this is the test. This is the test of, should I go to this thing? I got a gig tonight. These are the things we ask. Have I any good social, business, or personal reason for going to this place? And we meditate on that for a little bit. Or am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such places? We meditate on that for a little while. If you answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. Go or stay away, whichever seems best. But be sure you are on solid spiritual ground before you start, and that your motive in going is thoroughly good. So here's another little caveat. Do not think of what you will get out of the occasion. This is step 12 in its beauty. This is bringing our stuff out there. Do not think of what you will get out of the occasion. Think of what you can bring to it. But if you are shaky, you had better work with another alcoholic instead. Why sit with a long face in places where there is drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you are with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means go along. Let your friends know they are not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you are getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. I underline this one twice. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Many of us keep liquor in our homes. What's two good examples of that? Bill and Bob both kept liquor in the house, right? To detox guys. We don't do that shenanigans now. We go to professionals, but in those days it made a lot of sense, right? We often need it. Oh, it said it right here. We often need it to carry green recruits through a severe hangover. Now, if we had a guy in that certain same circumstance, what would we do? Detox. Some of us still serve it to our friends, provided they are not alcoholic. But some of us think we should not serve liquor to anyone. We never argue this question. Why? Because AA has no opinion on booze. None. Pro, con, don't give a crap. We feel that each family, in the light of their own circumstances, ought to decide for themselves. We are careful never to show intolerance or hatred of drinking as an institution. Experience shows that such an attitude is not helpful to anyone. Every new alcoholic looks for this spirit among us and is immensely relieved when he finds we are not witch burners. A spirit of intolerance might repel alcoholics whose lives could have been saved had it not been for such stupidity. We would not even do the cause of temperate drinking any good, for not one drinker in 1,000 likes to be told anything about alcohol by one who hates it. Someday, we hope that Alcoholics Anonymous will help the public to a better realization of the gravity of the alcoholic problem. But we shall be of little use if our attitude is one of bitterness or hostility. Drinkers will not stand for it. Italicized, after all, our problems were of our own making. Selfishness, self-centeredness. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to. And we're going to end there tonight. It was a great read tonight.